two village idiots with a love-hate relationship.
See, you got fat.
See, you still look like a 15-year-old girl, but not hot.
Who can't stop arguing over Oklahoma sports.
You know what, man? Why am I still talking to you?
Come on, we were doing good there, man.
It's the Just Okay Sports Podcast.
Sooner Nation, Thunder Nation, we are back. This is the Just Okay Sports Podcast, and that is the Just Oklahoma Sports Podcast, as well as just a very average okay podcast. One of your village idiots, Daryl. I am here with my brother, Jared. And if you like this podcast, please like and subscribe, hit all those things, leave us a five-star review and comment. We would greatly appreciate it. Jared, how's Florida?
Good. It finally stopped raining. yeah. It was, it's been like crazy. It's funny. Like my dude, that mows my yard messaged me today and was like, hey, do you want me to come mow? Cause like it's scheduled every now, like 2 weeks. I was having to come like every week, but now it's like, it's cooled off here enough. It was in the '80s today, that the grass has stopped growing quite as fast. But yeah, he like messaged me and I was like, bro, I was like, if you're trying to mow my yard right now, it would just literally look like a field. Like it would just be dirt. Cause it's a mud. It would be a mud pit. So I actually was able to like, but that was the good news is like today it was kind of, I guess it kind of stopped raining yesterday. Like it rained here a little bit in the morning and then like it was sunny most of the day, but it's football day. So, you know, you can't really, you know, it's hard to do stuff.
Right.
And so, yeah, today I got to go do some stuff, got to get outside and do a little bit. So yeah, but it's good. It's good. How are things in Oklahoma? Probably not 80 degrees, I assume.
No, all the rain's here. Actually, yesterday was a gorgeous day, if it tells you anything. Watched the game, and game finished, and I had to go get Christmas lights done. And in a t-shirt, I was sweating yesterday, putting up Christmas lights. It was that kind of warm. Today, it was miserably misting and raining all day with about a 20-mile-an-hour wind, and it was, I think, a high of like 50.
Dude,
so just, blah.
So, well, two things. One, we got to rename the segment instead of it being the intro. Just let's rename it the weather. This is like us giving your weather report. We always end up talking. We're a bunch of boomers, dude. But yeah, like it's apparently it's supposed to also like, I think this is like the, I don't know if it's El Nino season or whatever is like what we're in, cycle or whatever you want to call it. And I guess like they said, like we're supposed to get like crazy harsh winter this year, but it's like hella late. So I don't know. They're all just guessing. I just think the weathermen just like spin a board and then, you know, they're like, yeah, that's what's going to happen. There's no other thing that makes sense to me, but yeah, it's been good. Like it's just, I'm trying to get like the holidays. I mean, Thanksgiving's coming up. So I didn't go get a full turkey cause it's just going to be me this year. So I was like, I got a turkey breast. And so I've got that. I'll probably take it out. I think I'm gonna take it out tomorrow and start thawing it, and then I'll get the brine out probably like Tuesday night or Thursday or Wednesday and let it brine for 24 hours and smoke it on.
Heck yeah.
On Thursday.
Let's go, baby. Well, I've got to hope and pray. I'm setting a brisket out tonight in the refrigerator. It's frozen right now. Actually had a friend who had a cow slaughtered, and I got a full packer brisket out of said cow.
Nice.
And so it's frozen. So I'm setting it, hoping it will be thawed by the time we get home. And then I've got to start smoking it Sunday for staff dinner at the house on Monday. So see how that goes. But
yeah, anyway, it's always funny to me when people like that don't like they haven't ever smoked meats or anything. And they're like I had somebody who was like, hey, could you like smoke a brisket like by noon? I was like, if I'm smoking a brisket for something that's happening at noon. I'm going to be up at midnight, like from midnight until noon. So yeah, no, probably not.
Like minimum,
to be conscious. Yeah. So,
well, let's talk about something else that was cooking this weekend slowly. And that was the BYU and OU game. What many had predicted to be a snooze fest, ended up being, entertaining is not the right word. Suspenseful, I guess, might be the right word for it. Vegas had this at one point as high as a 26.5 point spread for this game. Before we get into stats and everything, though, I believe, Jared, you have a rant about said game. And so I made you wait last week. I'm unleashing the beast this week. So go right ahead, sir.
Okay, so I actually have two rants.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay, yeah. The pod will be over after said rants. Here we go.
Yeah. First rant, I'm still not on the intro. So that's, I got that going for me. That's amazing. Secondly, though, we really have to stop and talk about, like, oh, you came out with a win, and that's great. But I was like, I even said this, like, literally from the kickoff, like, pregame, I was saying this in the Discord and everything. Like, the NCAA, the Big 12, whoever, like, conferences have to start establishing, like, a minimum field, like, playable requirement. Because, like, when you saw, like, when they showed the close-up, I was like, again, it's really hard to tell necessarily on a field, you know, but it's like, dude, that field looked worse than any field I played on in high school or junior high, right? Yeah. And, like, in junior high, you're playing on, like, the practice field sometimes, you know what I mean? Like, they're literally got you, like, in the back 40, and it's like, dude, I haven't seen a field that bad. So I it just was frustrating because, like, I understand some gamesmanship and people are like, oh, well, you know, and I'm like, the problem is it's like, it's a risk. Not only, like, this is what didn't make sense to me, is like, it's a risk, not only for, it's a risk for every player on the field. Like, every, like, people were like, you literally watch people. And I even went back and watched some of the film, and it's like, it literally was affecting every facet of the game. I understand what there's like, I'm sure there's going to be some complaints and everything, and some of those are valid. But, like, if you go look at even, like, the offense and defensive linemen, the only way they could keep from falling down was basically to stand straight up, because if they didn't, they were falling because they couldn't keep their footing. You know what I mean? Like, there was nothing that they could do. And you could see that people, even, like, the receivers and running backs are taking, like, it literally, like, if you took it and just, like, I'd love to see this. If you took it and, like, Photoshopped it to where it was just an ice rink, I don't know that you'd be able to tell a difference. And I mean that seriously. Like, there's times where people are taking, like, those, you know, when you're walking on ice, you take those little tiny baby steps so you don't fall. That's what, like, the receivers and stuff were doing at times. Like,
yeah.
And I just, it's one of those things that I'm like, that sort of thing, like, maybe it wasn't intentional. Maybe they didn't mean for it to be that bad. But either way, it's like, they covered the field with a tarp beforehand for, like, the week before, and then pulled it off that morning before the game. So the ground was, you know, all kinds of messed up. I don't know. It really affected the game overall. I do think, from what I saw, I did see, what's crazy is I saw some positive things from OU, but it's like, some of the things that OU does, you can't execute on ice. You know what I mean? And, like, I know people are like, well, BYU played on two. It's like, yeah, but BYU can prepare for it more, right? Like, mm-hmm. BYU knows that those conditions were going to exist. And I understand that that's like, I don't know, like, people are going to get in the hole, well, that's home field advantage. What? And I'm like, there's just limits that we have to set. When it starts affecting player safety, like, I don't know how somebody didn't blow an ACL.
Yeah.
You know, like, you slip and you're at full speed or trying to go full speed and you slip. It's like, you can rip your ACL up, your knee up, your ankles up.
Well, that's like massive, like that, like, even more so than ACL, like, right? Like, ACL is usually like when your foot kind of gets caught in it, but it's a huge danger for groin injuries. Like, when you're planting that foot hard to cut and then it cuts out from underneath you and your weight just,
well, that's what I mean,
kind of basically end up in a one leg split. Like, it's super dangerous.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm just pointing out ACL, but that's what I'm saying. Just any sort of, like, your hamstring, anything that you're putting tension on that suddenly isn't under tension because of you're slipping on it, you could hurt, right? So,
yeah,
I think that needs to be addressed at some point. So I don't want to sound like the negative fan after a win, but it's like, dude, I just think it was frustrating to watch because it's like, maybe I'm getting old, but I just saw that and I was like, somebody's going to get hurt, whether that's OU or BYU, and it's 100% on this field condition. So,
yeah,
luckily that didn't really happen that I'm aware of, at least. But, you know.
Sure. Well, I have a rant on this game as well. How about that?
Okay.
Yeah. I first of all, fully agree with you as far as that, like, there's a big difference in gamesmanship in you're playing a fast team and you cut the grass extra tall to slow them down, right? But not only were people slipping, massive chunks of just turf were just ripping out of the ground, right? That's That's not acceptable and it's not okay. Here's my rant, though. Now, look, I want to first of all acknowledge my reputation on this podcast. There is a reason why we had a segment for a long time called Dark Daryl on the pod.
Right.
Because I can be negative at points, right? Now.
At points. Yeah, okay. Undershell, got it. Go for it. Didn't mean to interrupt the flow. Go keep going, King.
Sure, I can tell. So I can be negative at points. There's no doubt about that. But at the same time, I feel like just as an individual, but definitely from a podcast perspective, I feel our job is not to be crimson glass colored, whatever, the opinionist of the team, right? Like, we're not supposed to look at every single game and go, oh, no question, OU's about to win by 3 scores. We're supposed to look at it and actually give some analysis, right? Like, we're supposed to actually give some thought into what could potentially happen on the field. And both on Twitter and in the Discord, I simply asked a question this week, and it was just, in what world could OU lose this game? That was all. And I literally was curious from a podcast perspective, because looking at the stats, I felt like everybody else did. This should have been a very easy win. And just the fact that I even asked the question, I was basically told I was a moron and that I was scraping the bottom barrel for just actively looking for a reason to be negative and to gain clicks and to do this and to do that. And then sure enough, guess what happens? You get off to a slow freaking start on the road in an environment where they want to beat you because their season sucks. And if they beat you, their whole season's made. And guess what? We've got a ball game all the way into the fourth quarter, right? Like, even with DG in that game, it's a tight game. It's not going anywhere. And so I guess my rant is simply this. Twitter folk, Discord folk, I'm going to keep asking the questions. Because I said, when everybody came after me, is this not the same team that didn't look so good against SMU? Is this not the same team that didn't look so good against UCF? Is this not the same team that just lost to OSU, who lost by a billion to South Alabama? Is this not the same team that struggled against Cincinnati? And everybody said, oh my gosh, you're just trying to make things up. Yet, when we talk about BYU, the excuse was, you saw that they got beat by West Virginia by this many points. Yeah, I saw that. And I also saw that we barely beat Cincinnati, UCF, SMU, and we lost to OSU. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I hate to break it to y'all. BV's a great coach. He has a great staff. He's recruiting extremely well. And we said this 2 weeks ago. You still have players on this roster coming out of a Lincoln Riley culture, which we'll talk about later on, that are trying to find their way out of that. You also have a bunch of young, talented guys that BV's recruited that are freaking freshmen. And no matter how talented they are, they don't just turn into superstars as a freshman. Case in point, Jackson Arnold, I thought, played a good game when he had to come in for DG. But let's also be clear, he had some really rough moments as well, because he's a freshman. PJ Adebaraway, we've all talked about him. He's had some really good flashes. He's also had some really rough moments. He's a freshman. The only freshman on this team that has looked like an absolute assassin from day one is Peyton Bowen. That's it. Everybody else has looked suspect. And that doesn't mean they're not talented. It means they're freshmen. And so guys, like, this team is not talented enough to look past anybody, and especially on the road. So that's it. I'm done. But OU fans totally going off on, we're always going to win by 40, have to stop.
And what's funny is, I know, like, I knew as soon as you said something, I was like, I know exactly where this is going. Because, like, before people know, like, I didn't know where this rant was going before the pod. But then as soon as you were like, I'll do very early on just based on what you said. But yeah. It is what it is. I think people have to stop. I feel like everybody gets in, like, a video game or, like, a... Like, people get either in a video game mentality of, like, well, this team's A-plus in this category, so we should dominate them or whatever.
And well, how about this? You really want me to throw some gasoline on some OU fire? It's not video game mentality. It's 15 years of Texas Longhorn recruiting mentality. 5 5-stars on the roster. We're going to win the Natty. Didn't this team go below 500 last year? Am I making that up? Like, is that not fact? But now, I mean,
here's the thing. I think there's a lot of people on the extremes, right? Like, I still see people. Let's roll into it. Let's just get into this, okay? Let's just roll into the BYU game, because I felt there was some just talk in the Discord. It was funny. There's a couple of people in our Discord that were pretty active in during games usually. Literally the first drive, it cracks me up because I saw, like, you've seen the Fansville commercial with where he's Brian Bosworth. It was the first drive of the game or first play of the game. We have
guys,
people
it's
like
the first
that.
Play.
We have people like that in the Discord. And I'm always like, guys, I get it. You know, like when West Virginia drove down the field, that's not ideal. Yeah. But let's not burn the program down because West Virginia scored a touchdown on their first drive. All right. Like, there's still however many minutes left in this game. There's still 3.9 quarters left of the game. So deal with it. But anyways, I've seen some people on Twitter. I've seen people still trying to blame all the issues that OU has. OU isn't winning by a million points because of Jeff Lebby. I felt Jeff Lebby called a pretty good game. I don't think it was elite.
Yes.
But it was a well-called game, right? And even then, it's like, really, like I said, going back and watching the game, I know people were like complaining at first, like, why weren't we running Sawchuck more and all that? And I'm like, it was a weird set of circumstances. Like I said, it goes back to my rant of the field. I feel like a lot of the choices revolved around he kind of had to adjust on the fly because the offensive line, if you watch them, they weren't getting pushed because they were falling down, you know, or they just weren't able to create holes because they were having to figure out how to get footing on the field.
Well, one of the problems our O-line has is not staying low often. And so when they got up tall, trying to still push, and the other guy got under him, like you said, it was like an ice rink. You could watch them just slide backwards on the grass, even with their cleats in. So I agree with you. And then we even saw Sawchuck on two different runs, trying to make a cut to the hole that's there, and he just falls. So yeah, as an O coordinator,
yeah,
I do with that?
Yeah, there was one play in the beginning where it's like if Gavin's able to cut. Here's what I want to say. I thought OU, in a big sense on offense, played much better than what people think they did, even though we won by a touchdown. And my thought process behind that is again, there's so many plays. Even I'm only through like the first, I've got to like the second quarter, I think. I think I'm like 5 minutes into the second quarter, maybe 5 minutes is left. I don't remember. There's so many plays where it's like a guy literally just slips and falls.
Yeah.
Right. And it's, you know, Nick Anderson is cutting wide open, but he can't cut, so he falls down. Or like I said, Gavin Sawchuck. Like I said, there was like two of the Gavin Sawchuck's first runs. Like he falls down. And it's like if he makes that cut, if he's able to cut, then he's probably going for 20 yards minimum. There's nobody there. So I thought the game was actually called very well. I would probably give him a B+ rating through what I've watched so far again, even watching live, I guess. So I don't think we all need to chill out on where we're at. And the other part of that is we have to also just take into consideration. I agree with you on what you're saying. I think the future's bright. I think that they've also shown, while they've also showed their ability to bring in elite talent, a la Peyton Bowen, a la PJ, a la whoever.
Jackson Arnold. Jacquez Petaway. Yeah.
And I was even going to say Petaway has a tiny sliver of a sample size, but when he's been in, you can see that he has that elite burst.
Yes.
So I think he's going to be crazy good. But they've showed ability to develop. Dylan Gabriel looks far better this year than he did last year.
I would agree.
Ethan Downs is again a guy that I would just like, which should be your poster boy for development, right? and he had a lot of good plays in the game. There's a lot of positives. They've been able to do a lot of good things. Let's also keep in fact we're 9-2 right now, right? I think most, like you, Troy, and I, we all were kind of in that, like, I think y'all picked 9-3, and I think I said 10-2. So, like,
I think that's right.
So So we basically have nailed our picks. Like everybody's pretty much in that ballpark. So we can say we all pretty much guessed it. And you're still got a chance at a conference championship game. So I think everybody needs to chill out a little bit on that. But just to go through the stats, I do think like you have to keep all of that in mind, the field conditions, some of those things. Jackson Arnold had to get thrown in the second half pretty much, you know, at a whim. 368 total yards for OU. 224 of that was passing and 144 was rushing. Now, this is what's funny because we did the over-under on rushing last week at 4 yards per carry, and we had 4.2 yards per carry. Ooh. So, you know, but like again, here's another bright spot. I feel like this is another part where like you can see people, well, they don't play complimentary football. 28 and a half, almost 29 minutes of possession for OU.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like they finally, I think, I don't want to, you know, count my chickens before they hatch. We still got games left this season, so Lebby don't lay a goose egg. But Lebby's shown his ability to be able to run the ball fast, go score in a minute, and he's also shown the ability to run it slow and be methodical and drain the clock a little bit and give your guys time to rest. So I think that's good. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I feel like those stats are, like, pretty decent considering the conditions. I mean, I don't know what you think, but.
Well, I mean, I think when you consider how bad that team is defensively, it's still a letdown. I understand the conditions. I think for the first quarter, I think the conditions really did bother the team, like mentally, emotionally, just all the different things, trying to adjust and get comfortable with that, I do think was a struggle. But even so, they are terrible defensively, and especially against the run. And the first half was horrendous trying to run the football. And again, maybe the field, all those things, but that was a struggle. And then on the defensive side, honestly, it was even worse. I mean, you know, you give up 390 yards of offense to BYU, who was like dead bottom, especially in rushing attack. I think they maybe averaged 3 yards, like 2.9 yards a carry, something crazy. They were like that.
I don't remember what the ranking was, but they were like over 100 in the ranking.
Like 120 something, I think, in rush yards.
Yeah, I can't remember. They were pretty bad in every statistical category on offense. So,
and they had 217 yards rushing.
Yeah.
I mean, and what's weird is like the first half, the D-line got destroyed. The third quarter, there was a little burst in there somewhere where out of nowhere, the D-line looked really dominant. I mean, just started going crazy for like two series, maybe three, and then just went away again. And then it was the same old thing. Just no, I cannot figure that part of this team out. Like there really are weeks where they are extremely disruptive. And then there's weeks like this one where it just, there's literally maybe two or three series where they're getting the job done and the rest it's not. And so I don't know. And I understand Danny had the flu and all the stuff,
here's my thing. Here's my take on it. Cause I do agree with you. The defense did not look good for most of the game, but I will say this, and this is something that I think people are going to have to start coming to grips with. You better freaking hope Danny Stutzman comes back to play in the SEC. Or I think he might be in big trouble. I'm going to be honest about that. Right? I mean, I know you have a whole offseason. It's a whole, you know, however many months from now, 9 months or whatever it is from now. And that's fair. This team looks totally different with Danny Stutzman on the field. Like when you see Danny come in the game, it seems like everybody elevates their game. Right? I think that's a little bit why Kanick looks better with Danny. I think it's not just a Canic thing. I think it's everybody looks a little bit better. So I'm gonna call him Daddy the Flu Stutzman this week because he had a hell of a game, by the way. And this is what's crazy. Had the flu, had to be put on an IV before the game and I think during the game to stay hydrated to be able to even play, which by the way, can we just applause to Danny?
Yes.
Like especially
still has a nerve issue in his arm and his shoulder. Still has an ankle that's not 100% and like, still has an old arm elbow brace that he has on from when he like destroyed his elbow 2 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, everybody was questioning his will to play after the BV story about the playbook. And, you know, he's such a goofball and all those things. And I saw a lot of people that have been, you know, before the season asked that question. It's like, guys, like, I almost want to pull our seats on some of those people and be like, dude, this guy wants, like, he not only played with the flu, he was the leading tackler. He had 10 tackles, one sack, and two tackles for loss with the flu. The dude, like I said, I'm sorry. That dude is just, if he's on the field, the team plays better. There's just no other way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, agree. I totally agree. And he played great. Billy Bowman, great. Now, did you hear the whole back and forth of Billy Bowman about his interception?
What about it?
So Billy Bowman interviewed after the game, says, I was actually supposed to blitz. And when I looked out, I noticed that the inside receiver was uncovered. And so instead of blitzing, I dropped back to that receiver and then saw him throwing the ball and I picked it off. Right. Which when I hear, I was listening to the post game while I was putting lights up right after the game. And I was like, dang, Billy Bowman, you saved our bacon, right? Then BV does his post-game press conference. And so one of the media people goes, hey, we were talking to Billy Bowman. He mentioned blah, 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 blah. And BV goes, what? No, Billy was not supposed to blitz on that play. The linebacker was supposed to blitz. They motioned this player over, which means he now takes that player. And then the linebacker takes the other gap and is the one that's supposed to blitz. And then they all went, oh, and he goes, well, I guess he accidentally did the right thing. And he made one heck of a play to finish it off. I mean, oh man, not that it's a terrible thing. That kind of stuff happens, but man, like it just makes you think of some of the defensive struggles really were for whatever reason, them just not being completely dialed in and locked in on what their job was and what they needed to do.
Well, and the scary part of that, if that is the case, they don't have many times to they don't have many days to prepare because the game's Friday.
Right.
So you're working with a short week. And TCU's, little people are down on TCU, and I don't think TCU's, obviously, they're not a college football playoff team, so they're not nearly as good this year. But I still think TCU's a team that's it's in the same vein of TCU's a team that can beat you, right? If you don't come prepared.
Yes.
They have playmakers. 100%. But we're going to get into that at some point. But
we've kind of just ranted really our whole way through this game and some of the things that we've seen. What would you say was your greatest negative of the day? And even after watching tape back, what would you say is your greatest negative?
Can I give one that applies to more than just this game?
Sure.
Key Lawrence.
Wow.
He has just disappeared for about, I can't remember the last time he just had an impact for an entire game. Yeah. Texas is probably the last time that he really was just impactful. Like he'll make a nice play here or there, but outside of that, it's like, dude, he just is gone on the field. I don't see him make plays. I don't see him, you know, he's not a guy, you know, especially when you watch film. Like I really caught myself because I was like watching film and I started watching Billy Bowman. Billy Bowman's really started to step up his game the last few games.
Yeah.
You know, obviously you're watching Danny, you're watching Ethan Downs, you're watching Bothra. You know, you have those guys that you kind of like mentally are a little bit more focused on when they're on the field. And like Key Lawrence is just not on that list for me anymore. And he used to be. So it's a curious thing. I don't know what's going on there. I don't know if it's a mental thing, if it's a physical thing. I have no idea. I don't have any information, but yeah, I just think it's like something like that. I think it's just a guy that's disappeared. He still seems like be like a vocal leader. I see him hyping guys up and I see him, you know, trying to be on the sidelines and stuff, getting everybody, you know, going and stuff. But as on the field, he just has seemed like he's disappeared to me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. For me, man, I mean, I've posted it multiple times and I've now said it pretty much the entire season. And my big negative takeaway after watching this game is it's the trenches. Sorry, Jared, stepping away for a second, but I'll keep ranting here. But the trenches, man, like, again, there's 3.5 quarters in that game where the D line's getting eaten up. There's 3.5 quarters of that game where the O line's getting eaten up. And look, both sides. We keep saying it, but I'm going to say it again. Rouse is gone. Matower's gone. There's a good chance Guyton is gone on your O-line. That's three, right? There's a slight chance of Rain. I don't think so. I don't think there's any way he goes to the draft. But let's just say he does. That's four. And the only guys right now that Beedenbow has been willing to play on this offensive line is Troy Everett, who's been dominated, Savion Byrd, who apparently never has a clue of what he's supposed to do, Jacob Sexton, who looks okay, right? Not bad, and Caden Green. So out of those, you have two that have shown some kind of potential for your first year in the SEC. You have two linemen that have shown some potential. On the D-line, Coe, gone. Kelly, gone. Laulu, gone. Bothroyd, gone. Trace Ford, gone. I mean, you start going down the list of guys that are our best D-linemen, and they're all gone, which means you're going to have to play David Stone. You're going to have to play Nigel Smith. You're going to have to play who else is in this class? Wyatt Gilmore's, right? Like, which again, are they good players? Yeah, but they're going to be 18-year-olds going against 20-year-olds in the SEC. I am terrified of next year. Because as much as I do think the D-line's improved, we've seen development, there's just no youth there. The only guy that I have true hope in pushing forward is R. Mason Thomas, PJ, and Kelvin Gilliam, who we've not seen play at all this year. Like, hardly at all. But my understanding is they're letting him work it out and just continue to develop himself because they know they have the depth and they want to turn him loose next year. But we'll see. But the trenches, man, it's a scary thought when you're going to a league that's built on them. How bad we are in a Big 12, that's horrendous. I mean, horrendous. So that's my negative. How about a positive for you?
Just overall in the game. Yeah, I guess I'm just going to pick the easy one. Gavin Sawchuk is hitting his stride, it seems. Like I said, I honestly, he ended up with 14 carries for 107 yards and a tutty. And even Towie had
a touchdown run was unreal.
That was a near Marshawn Lynch, you know, dragging people off of himself.
That's a big boy run.
Yeah.
As they said in the Discord this week, I don't remember who coined it, but the dog chuck line was
probably pretty good. I feel like that's a Swayze line. It could be somebody else. I don't want to misappropriate the credit there. But yeah, Sawchuk finally hitting his stride. He's a bright spot, I think. And I'm glad that he's just finally getting that opportunity. And again, like I said, when you watch the film, it's like I easily could have seen. I'm really anxious to see him play against TCU on a hopefully they don't, you know, let cattle roam the field or something before the game. But yeah, like if he has a field where he can cut on and stuff, it's like, dude, I honestly could have seen him if they were able to just run the ball like they wanted. He may have had a 200 yard game. Like,
yeah,
there's one run that I can think of off the top of my head that if he makes the cut, unless somebody somehow gets a hand on him at the line, I don't know how he doesn't house it. I mean, he's at least minimum going 20 yards, and that's if he just lets off the gas. So, Sawchuk just was impressive. So I got to give credit to him. He stayed in it. He stayed in the locker room and stayed working, I guess. And, you know, DeMarco's giving him his chance, and he's shining. So,
yeah.
I guess, and really that goes to, like I said, it was funny. We were having conversations about Towie. What's going on with Towie? Is he suspended? Is there some sort of issue there, because he and Towie was, I don't even think on the depth chart. It was like Sawchuk or Major, or maybe it was Barnes or somebody like that. And so Towie wasn't technically even on the starting line or the depth chart, but he ended up playing, but he had 5 for 25, you know, I mean, he came in and was effective. He had a couple of plays where he got stopped, but he was, other than that, it was like, dude, I mean, you know, 5 for 25, you're averaging 5 yards carry. It's pretty good. So the running back room, I think, is good. It's just, again, I feel like that's the one where we have a lot of talent too, but we have to start figuring out how to use the personnel better. But overall, it's like there's actually a lot of talent in that room that we are more spoiled than we think we are.
I agree with that. My big positive in the game is the guy that I just keep trying to understand what's not putting him on the field, and that's Jaden Gibson's day. I mean, I've been a fan of that guy since he came out of high school and loved his tape. His size and his speed, you do not find.
Hey,
you just don't find it.
Who was it last week? Man, somebody last week picked them as a player that should have a good game. And who was that? Was that me? I think that was me. Yeah, it was me.
I mean, I've done that like every week since Andrell Anthony's.
Yeah. Well, you haven't done it this week. So.
But yeah, 2 catches, 82 yards, a TD. I mean, again, just continues to make plays and be there, be open. He is involved on the sideline just every which way. But man, just it's really cool. And again, I think even within that, kind of the subplot to that positive is Emmett Jones. I mean, you cannot deny Farouk is a better receiver right now than he was before Emmett Jones got here, right? Mm-hmm. Look, Drake Stoops has always been a dog. We always loved him. But, like, look, let's all be honest. Drake's playing on another level. I think that is in part to Emmett Jones, right? Like, I think he's done a great job developing this room, and I know at times it's felt slow, but I'd say those are the big positives, you know. And then, like, big picture, and we unfortunately we've had to say this too many times, but it says a lot about the culture of this team. Is this? They played bad and they won. We have said that 3 times this year now, where they have played a really poor game and they have still won the game, right? Like, there were still a lot of penalties in this game. Missed tackles in this game, just all the things. Even so, they have found a way to win. And that was the difference in this team last year. I mean, again, 5 games lost in 1-score games. I mean, that's trending the wrong way. The culture definitely seems to be this a team that can win now, even when they're not at their best.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think, trending in the right direction. You know, and like I said, another guy that had a good day that didn't really light up the stat sheet was Nick Anderson. I mean, that pass from he really had 2 steps on his guy, and Jackson Arnold just overthrew him.
Jackson was so hyped. You could tell he's like, there it is. It's there. And just as soon as he let it go, he's like, oh, God, my adrenaline was running too high.
That's the things you see out of a freshman quarterback, right? That's buck fever, right? That's where you get the trembling leg.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what it was. He saw that. That was a home run ball. That's you hit him in stride, and then Nick Anderson can freaking do his taxes on the way into the end zone. You know, like it's.
Yeah.
And like I said, it was the same. Like, there was a lot of plays. There's like, again, another play for a guy that Nick Anderson, I thought, would have had 100-yard receiving, because there's two plays I can think of where he fell down trying to cut, you know, and. Yep. So things like that. So I, like I said, the stats on this game are really wonky. I think that's where we have to go with it is I don't think these stats, I'm not saying you can just throw them out completely, but I think they don't tell the story, as well as they would in other games.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Well, we're going to put that in the rearview mirror and move ahead. And so one of the things that we have not talked about in several weeks, and we're sorry, but the cycle has been fairly slow. The last several weeks has been recruiting. And I'd say the biggest thing right now, recruiting wise, if you follow this at all, there's a young man by the name of Grant Bricks. He is an offensive lineman out of the state of Iowa. This is one he was in for the West Virginia game for his official visit to OU. This is a Nebraska. Yes, I said it. Nebraska and OU battle. Now, it's an OU Nebraska battle because he's a homebody. And so Nebraska is in this number one. And the other side is Matt Rhule is a very good recruiter, right? But Nebraska is not far from home. You know, a good, rich history of a program. Matt Rhule is a guy that has shown he can develop guys, get them to the league, all those things. But yeah, Grant Bricks is the one that Who knows when a decision's coming? But I will say that OU seems to have made a very good final push for him with the official visit. Jared, have you got any notes or heard anything on Grant Bricks?
Yeah, I mean, it's this one's one of those coin flips, I think. You know, most of what I've read and seen and heard is it really is if he went to Nebraska or OU, nobody's going to be surprised. So I think it's – and I think OU's really, really – I mean, everybody's desperate to get him. But those are the two schools leading, and I think OU is doing everything in their power. So, you know, I think, again, like you said, that maybe the bonus for the situation he landed out earlier is that he's going to be able to get early playing time or, you know, have a chance to get on the field in the rotation a lot sooner. But, yeah, I mean, I hope that they get him. But, you know, again, it's this is not one that I'd be willing to put any sort of money on.
Yeah. And again, just to clarify, this is a top five offensive tackle in the class. And I know I said it's between us and Nebraska, but just so that you understand, this young man has offers from Alabama, Auburn, Iowa, Iowa State, Miami, Michigan State, Notre Dame, Ole Miss, Oregon, Penn State, Pitt, Stanford, Tennessee, Wisconsin. I mean, there's a few names on that list that are kind of O-line use, right? Like, that's just what they're known for. It's what they do. So this guy's no slouch. He's rated in the top 100, those kinds of things. Now, I will also say I believe he's a project, at least by his profile. He is only listed at 280, and when you see photos of him, you're like, yeah, that dude can put on a lot more weight as a lineman.
Oh, that's going to he's going to be a 300-plus pounder when he gets yeah. filled out.
Yeah, and he's going to need to do that. So I would be clear that while this would be a huge win for the OU offensive line class, this is not a guy that can come in and play his freshman year, in my opinion. This right. is a guy that's going to be a sophomore junior before he's in there. And if he's playing earlier than that, well, then I mean, hats off to him and way to go and all the different things. But again, at 6'5", 280, I think the SEC is not a place you want to be playing tackle at 280 pounds.
You know, you're going to love this transition. You know where he could play?
Where?
USC. Okay. He'd probably be their biggest offensive lineman right now, I think.
Their O-linemen are good size. How well they're coached, that's a question mark. That we'll see. But yeah, we can go straight to that. We'll go straight into general college football. And
well, I was gonna go to our picks review because it was one of our picks. But go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. I gotcha. So, well, let's do that. We did make our picks against the spread, right?
I'm gonna skip to the UCLA USC game because I was like straight up UCLA is gonna handle business. UCLA is gonna win. And they pretty much dog walked USC.
Yes, they did.
I mean, that game, the score sheet is not. That was a game where UCLA was over them on them the whole game.
Yeah,
and that I feel like that could have been. If you had told me it was 50-10, I would have been like, yeah, that makes sense.
Well, let's be clear. There's plenty of videos circulating the internet right now with right at over 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter that the stadium is completely emptying of USC fans because this was a home game for USC and they were out in the fourth quarter. So, yeah, this game was over pretty quickly, to say the least.
Yeah, it was just, man, it got out of hand quick. And I've seen people... I want to get your thoughts on this real quick. This is kind of college. Well, let's do a review and then we'll talk about it when we get to that. But
yeah,
I did nail that one. I just want to give my props on that one because
picked UCLA to win.
Yeah,
you did. Now, overall in the week, here's the games we picked. We picked Colorado, Washington State. I got that one right. We picked Washington at Oregon State. We both missed on that one. We picked Utah. By half a point. That's true. By half a point. We both picked Utah at Arizona. And, dude, I knew Arizona's a better football team. They're actually pretty good.
Okay.
I was not buying the hype at all.
I was like, I've seen like a bunch of memes floating around. You saw the deal where like their athletic department's like $250 million short because they had some weird accounting error where they thought they had more assets or something than they thought. Or I don't remember what it was. But like they're like millions of dollars short. And I was like, well, maybe they knew that their football team was better than everybody thought, because like they've showed up out of nowhere.
Yeah, they've been fantastic. Georgia at Tennessee, we picked. We both got that one right. North Carolina at Clemson. Jared got that one right. I missed it, picking North Carolina to cover there. Oklahoma State at Houston. Jared picked Houston. I had OSU, so I got that one. Jared misses out.
If Houston didn't just literally, I don't even, that was the fastest collapse I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
They were all over OSU. I was like, this is going to be UCF OSU 2.0.
Yeah.
And within the matter of a minute 30, that was all gone.
All changed. Yeah. Texas at Iowa State. I picked Texas. Jared picked ISU. So I got that one. UCLA at USC. We both picked UCLA to cover, although I picked them to cover, not necessarily to win. Jared took another step farther. But I did pick against our Sooners, saying that BYU would cover. I was correct. Jared was wrong, which leaves Jared for the week and our 9 picks that we made this week, 3-6, and it makes me 6-3. So at least my consolation this week is, oh, you played terrible. But if I had actually put some money on the tables, I'd have come home a very happy man.
Yeah, I guess I got to buy you dinner is pretty much where we're headed, but it's fine. yeah, it was an interesting week. There was a lot of good games this week, actually. The Kansas State game was wild. Oh man, there was a ton of good games. There was also some pretty rough news for Florida State this week. If you saw that game. That game was wild. As a matter of fact, I came over, I flipped over to it because one of my buddies is a Florida State fan, and he was like, we were texting, and he was like, dude, I'm in such a bad mood. And I said, why? And he said, because we're down 13-0 to North Alabama, I think it was. And I was like, what? There's no way. And I switched over, and like they had already Jordan Travis had already gone down. And I was like, what, you know, what the heck's going on? And I made the mistake because like they were like, oh, we're going to cut commercial break. And so I got on Twitter and was like, well, he like, you know, did he targeting, you know what I mean? You don't know what it is. Like they weren't saying on the broadcast, and I pulled it up and I hadn't seen the Discord, and I pulled it up on my phone. I was like, oh my God, I saw the injury. So yeah, bad news for them.
Really bad. I did not watch it, and I'm glad I didn't. That stuff, I don't do well with it. But yeah, Jordan Travis absolutely gone for the rest of the season for Florida State. I think one of the things fascinating with Florida State, obviously they went on to dominate Northern Alabama, but how do they finish the season, number one? And number two, I'm very fascinated now if Florida State hangs on, what the playoff committee will do. Because even Kirk Herbstreit the other day was saying, the job of the committee is not to pick the most deserving. It's to pick the 4 best teams, which I hate that statement with everything within me. I hate that statement. So I believe fully if Florida State wins out that they're going to put them in, just because I think the chaos that would ensue for a Power 5 team to go undefeated in the regular season and then not get in would just be unreal. But they have set a precedence that they can do that. And so it'll be very fascinating to see what happens there and where that all goes. A couple other just minor notes, just real fast. Auburn, you just lost to New Mexico State. SEC, can't wait. Number two, Washington is really good. I think it's fair to say that. I mean, dude, like, I don't know what else you can criticize them for.
I feel like they should be, like, right now, if I was doing my top picks, I probably still have Ohio State and Michigan in there because they're going to play this week. It's this week. Mm-hmm. So they're going to play. So one of them get knocked out. But, like, right now, I'd probably have Washington as my number 3 or 4 team.
Oh, I've got Washington as, I think, number one. As much as I know people golf at that because of Georgia, they have absolutely earned the number one spot, period. They have earned it. Florida State's in there. My deal with Ohio State and Michigan is we've all forgotten the Notre Dame game where Notre Dame stopped Ohio State and won the game, but then realized that, oh, they don't know how to count their own personnel. And so they played however many plays with 10 players on the field instead of 11 or 9 players, wasn't it? That's what it was. They played the last play of the game with 9 players on the field, and Ohio State squeezes out a win. And look, Notre Dame's not a bad team. They're not a great team. And they kind of got manhandled in that one. That's still in my brain. So whereas Michigan, with all their science dealing, just continues to dominate. Now, the other thing that happened this week, though, that we've alluded to 1,000 times over, and
this was today. The Big 12 put out another statement today.
Oh, I was talking USC. USC.
Oh, sorry, my bad. Go ahead.
So, right, follow the flow. Because we are
Keep going. Jeez, I hate it here. Go ahead. Let's talk to USC hate.
USC gets trounced by UCLA, as we mentioned earlier. Look, here's the deal, man. We say this every time that these things happen. There are two reasons that we are petty about this. The reason is because of the way Lincoln Riley left and all of this stuff. It is the way that he tried to dismantle this roster. And the other reason that we keep coming back and being petty about it is this, that now, all of a sudden, after losing 5 of 6, USC fans are saying, I think Lincoln Riley may not be a very good head coach. I think there might be culture problems. I think he doesn't know how to build a team from the trenches out. I feel like Lincoln Riley's wasting talent, which, by the way, yes, we were mad that Lincoln Riley left, but we also all said, I don't know. It really seemed that the trajectory of OU football was on a downtrend with Lincoln Riley. We saw culture problems at Oklahoma all the way down. We saw skill positions, no trench play at Oklahoma. And every single person across the board nationally said, we were just the petty ex-girlfriend that couldn't get over it. Now, let me just say this. When you have a fan say something stupid, that's the petty one that you need to look at that's mad about the ex-girlfriend. When you have thousands of OU fans all on the same page about something, not one, not even 100, thousands saying these things, I'm sorry, USC, we told you so.
Here's something that I think people are really need to start coming to grips with. I know it's been talked about a little bit here and there, but like after this, how this season's ended for USC, we need to double the size of Bob Stoops' statue. Because you have to realize, I mean, think about it. The best teams that Lincoln Riley coached at OU, he was riding the culture and the players that Bob Stoops brought in.
Right. Right.
So, and like I said, he goes to USC, where USC already apparently had some culture issues, already had, right. they were not a roster built to win.
Right.
And all those things. And so it's like he was starting in debt. And you know what I mean? Like he was not in a good position. And you're seeing it. And we talked about this. You and I were texting during the game, or this weekend about Caleb Williams. There's no way I would literally put money that Caleb Williams doesn't come back. That dude looked completely checked out after the game was over. I do think he played hard. I know people were trying to ride him hard and saying like he didn't care, and I thought that was dumb. I was like, I think the kid's a competitor. Right. I think he wants to win, even though he could easily have said, I'm shutting down. Like that's what annoys me.
100%.
Like, he doesn't care to be there. I'm like, look, at the end of the game, I think he was ready to get off the field. I'm ready to go home and do whatever, right? Like, I think he's done. I don't know that he'll play in their bowl game. He might. I would say I thought there was no chance he played in OU's bowl game. When he played, he could easily have said, I'm sitting out because I know I'm going to transfer.
Right.
Came out and played in a bowl game that meant nothing and did it for his teammates. And I'm tired.
And balled out.
And balled out. And like I said, for Caleb, it's like I like the guy. I still like the guy. I'm still cheering for him. But without him, unless Malachi Nelson is just otherworldly like Caleb is, they're going to have some real issues.
Yep. Well, and again, like a couple different things within that. And I want to come back to this with BV as well. BV has talked about the massive roster turnover he's had since he's been here, right? Like 70 whatever new players. But culture still is here.
Right.
And you made a great statement. The best teams that Lincoln Riley had were Bob's old teams. So the first one he leads is that playoff team that we all are like, why did you squib kick, right? Then you've got the Kyler year where you go play Bama, right? Then you've got the Jalen year, right, where you you go and you have to play maybe one of the greatest college football teams of all time and get trounced. But, I mean, it was a struggle to get there more than it had been ever before, right? Then the Spencer year that was a struggle. Then the Spencer year that turned into the Caleb year that was really a struggle that got kind of sort of saved down the stretch by Caleb to some degree, right?
Or I mean,
wheels completely fall off in that year. So I say all that to say it took about 2 years before Bob's culture completely disappeared from that team. BV's in year two. I think next year you see the Lincoln Riley culture finally vacate the OU premises and get out of there. But dude, it ain't good.
Well, I feel like if you listen to, and you know, shout out to Danny and Kanick and the podcast on the Prairie guys and all that, even Gabe and I think Teddy have alluded to it a little bit. I think they're a little bit more restrained in how they talk about Lincoln because they're closer to the university and they don't want to.
Right.
They're not going to come out and say what they really think about him probably. But you know, like you've heard Braden Willis and them when they're on there talk about like the difference in culture.
Yeah.
And just how different it was in the approach and everything. So it's like, I do feel like that culture still, like you said, got to get weeded out a little bit. But yeah, so I'm really excited. So yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see what happens. Apparently, like the report is that Lincoln Riley's buyouts anywhere from I saw somebody tweet that it's anywhere from between $70 and $100 million buyout.
Yep.
And
because they basically gave him a Jimbo contract at USC.
Yeah.
They gave him like $10-11 million a year for 10 years guaranteed.
Well, and I'll give you props. And this is something you alluded to. Because I've seen people, well, he's going to go to the NFL or he's going to go to Texas A&M. That's the two things I've seen people say. And I'm like, he's not going to go to Texas A&M for a whole host of reasons. One, from an A&M perspective, not even talking about his record currently and culture and all that, I would be shocked if they're going to do the boosters after paying Jimbo whatever, however many million it was to walk. Are going to say, well, now we're willing to write another $100 million check to bring in somebody else, plus the contract,
right?
So that's not happening. And then, like you alluded to, like you think NFL teams are watching this and going, "Oh, that's our guy."
Yeah,
I mean, I've seen crazy things. They did hire Cliff Kingsbury. Somebody made that point, and that's fair. Cliff Kingsbury was a head coach in the NFL, but yeah, it's just a whole.
Here's an interesting nugget that I heard the other day, actually from Teddy Lehman, who continues to be on the train that he thinks Lincoln Riley will go to A&M. Did you see the check that Jimbo had to put his hands on and smile for the cameras at the A&M game before his firing?
Yeah, that was the whole meme about them. Yeah.
Have you done the math?
Uh-oh.
$166 million check. Jimbo's buyout? Around 75 to 76 million. That leaves you what? 90 million.
Yeah, I mean, here's my thing, though. I mean, I guess it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibilities, but I just can't see Lincoln. Then you go to Lincoln's perspective. He basically didn't want to go to the SEC with OU. And I know he's going to the Big Ten, but I just don't see him going from... It just doesn't make any sense from his perspective. I guess going to USC didn't either, but
no. Here's what's gonna get. This is what'll get wild. If he actually did a jump to like something like A&M, I can 100% guarantee you the whole people breaking into my house, the whole the university was not serious about football, the people there, I couldn't do it anymore, all the stuff. He is going to go scorched earth on OU, and that he had to go to USC because that was the opportunity in front of him to just get out of there. And he didn't want to bring it up, and he didn't want to talk about it. But now, and he'll throw USC under the bus too, right? Like he's gonna throw them under the bus if he were to do something like that. And you want to talk about petty OU fans coming out of the weeds? Oh my,
dude. Here's what's funny. I still crack it up because, like, I want to, like, I need to do an edit of it, but like him saying things like that, and it's like he does interviews in his office at USC, and it's like, right. Oh, cool, dude, they bought you a dorm fridge. They probably literally like had that locked in storage because a student left it, is what it looks like. But anyway, yeah, I don't know. It's gonna be a weird thing that's gonna play out. I don't know. I don't see that happening, but I will say, just to wrap up the USC talk, because we've said that name enough. I can't see them being. I think they could struggle to be bowl eligible next year unless they just portal in a massive amount of talent somehow.
They would have to really. I mean, they've got LSU. They have got. They put that. Well,
They play in like the Big Ten teams. They play like they're off. Their non conference is already pretty rough, but their conference schedule is
insane.
Yeah.
They have a tough I don't see how they wouldn't have the toughest schedule in all of college football next year. So anyways, it's fascinating. And of course, we called it. They lost, and we're three plays away from having four wins this year.
Dude, he said we're 3 to 4 plays away, bro. You have 5 losses.
I mean,
you have 5 losses, dog. Like, look, I mean, it's and then did you see the players bought like. It's what's funny is it's like, dude, you can't tell me that you don't read those guys' body language and you're like, dude, these guys are freaking done with Lincoln Riley.
Well, again, what it shows is now that they've given him ultimate control, because that's one of the things that OU does very well. It coaches its guys through that process. It is clear there is no coaching whatsoever of those players to deal with media. None. Like, for one, OU's players always come in with at least a clean shirt on or something. USC shows up with undershirts and pads on, right? Like their Nike Combat, you know, dry fit stuff on, and just sitting there, you know, lean back like this and roll in there. I mean, like, if an OU guy did that, like Mike Houck would literally come over, grab them by the neck, and remove them from the platform. And so it makes the whole thing look bad. And then, by the way, I've now watched 3 post-game press conferences for USC. The minute a question goes to a player, the little SID lady for USC, last question, every time. They will not let those – they bring those players in there. They don't give them microphones. The only microphone is Lincoln. That's it. He is the only, again, it's that narcissistic control all of it stuff.
Well, and we didn't even talk about, just to highlight real quick, Caleb didn't do it. He refused to go do an interview after the game, which is interesting, which I don't know. To be honest, I know people have been trying to throw shade at, I don't think it's a good look for him. And I've seen people trying to throw shade at Caleb over it. And I'm like, he's already sat next to that coach for 4 other losses, basically.
Right.
And had to, you know, look, put on a brave face and take the lumps. You think he's really going to in his last most likely collegiate football game after they just got beat down by a coach that didn't look like he wanted to be there? You know,
that's the other thing is, was it really Caleb's decision, or did the university make it for him and just say that Caleb is not coming?
Yeah. Like, yeah,
you never know.
It's such a wild thing, and it's, you know, again,
sorry, the last thing on USC, because this was another question asked, and you could tell Lincoln didn't want to mess with it, and it was, what kind of changes will be made this offseason? And he said, well, we've already made a pretty big change, which to me says you don't want to make any more changes.
Dude, look, we've talked about this, because We've said this. I don't care who they hire as a defensive coordinator. I've said this. I'll put money on it. They could go hire Kirby Smart to be their D coordinator, and I think their defense would still suck. Until they figure out strength and conditioning, until they allow their players to be physical in practice, it ain't gonna matter. It ain't gonna matter. You think Kirby Smart wouldn't get hired for one? He'd say, "You're gonna let my guys even be able to wrap up?" And no, it's gonna be too below practice. No.
Well, and like, here's the other thing: the other unit that's getting destroyed by USC fans is the offensive line. Do you know who their offensive line coach is?
Do not know.
Annie Hansen's husband.
Oh, it is, isn't it?
So what happens when you fire Annie Hansen's husband?
Well, she gone.
See what I mean? He's got this little web of people, and it's the same with Benny Wiley. He's that old Texas Tech tree of all these people he's brought in, and then there's all these. Then to keep Annie, he hired the husband so he could keep Annie, and the husband's failing. If they come in and make him do a lot of changes, it could get really crazy. Now let's move on to the last thing with general college football. We got to get off USC. The re-clarification. I did not see this today. I'm not even going to lie. Didn't even get a chance to see it.
So they posted it. Essentially, it's saying what they said before. I guess I have two problems with this. They basically said what we've thought. Right now, where OU stands in this to our the OU listeners. Both of you. We need Texas to lose or Oklahoma State to lose, or we're not in. Like, our destiny's out of our hands. They have to have a loss. And there's a couple other scenarios that can be chaotic, right? I'm almost kind of fine with that, even though, my problem initially starts with, I thought whenever these new teams were coming in, I thought that they would do divisions like we used to in the Big 12.
Right.
Where you'd have, a North and a South or whatever.
Right.
Right. And then you just have the North champ play the South champ. Boom. Bob's your uncle. There was I can't remember any controversies about that whenever I was, growing, whenever I was young watching football. But the other interesting part is, basically the last sentence reads, I'm not going to read the whole sentence, but it reads a little bit like, there's other scenarios that can play out that we just are going to kind of have to figure out as we get there. There's literally a last sentence that just says,
you're going to have to read it. You got to read this sentence. Okay.
If Texas loses on Friday and two lost teams win amongst Kansas State, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State on Friday and or Saturday, there will be three or four teams tied for both championship berths. Multiple scenarios exist in the circumstance contingent on which teams remain in the tiebreaker pool.
Okay. I get what they're saying.
I don't know. This is the problem I have with the Big 12 and why I'm with you. I didn't want to go to the SEC in the sense of I dogged on the SEC, and there's a lot of reasons not to like the SEC. But at least they have their crap together. There's not anybody yelling at SEC right now of, well, we're going to have 14 teams that are all saying that they got a chance at the playoff or a chance at the conference championship game. this is what I was talking about. This is the lack of a forethought for the Big 12 of, when they have 16 teams, bro, you're going to have to set up conference or divisions. You're going to have 16 teams after next year. It's going to be 16 teams in the Big 12.
But they don't, because the SEC is not going to have conferences. The ACC is not going to have conferences or divisions. The Big 10 is doing away with divisions.
They're going to have to develop some sort of logic behind this. I think divisions are going to have to come back. Something, I don't know. But again, This is just like when we went to, when everybody was clamoring, when it was just 10 teams in the Big 12. This is such a, do you understand how dumb that is to say all this, too? 10 teams in the Big 12, 16 teams in the Big 12. has been 12 teams in God knows how long. It was that year that it was TCU, Baylor, and Oklahoma State were all technically tied for the Big 12 championship or something wild.
Right.
And so instead of naming a champion, they said, well, we're just going to have co-champion. So it was like co-champion, co-champion. It was like, bro, like, what are we doing? You know what I mean? And everybody was like, let's just have a conference championship game. And they're like, no, we can't. And then what's funny about it is they said, well, we can't because the NCAA doesn't allow it. And then the NCAA turns around and like was like, yeah, we would have let you if you just basically asked, essentially, is how that came out. So just the Big 12, I think, is a joke of a conference still. I'm glad we're leaving it. But yeah. And then the other thing, I guess a little quick nugget to wrap up the college football news. NCAA, let freaking James Madison play in a bowl game. I know they lost this week to App State, I think it was. But they're like a 10-win team. Let them play in a freaking bowl game. They're better than a whole host of teams that are going to be bowl eligible.
Yeah. And I get that. I do. But I also understand the other end of it. Of I kind of understand why the rule is there to try to prevent teams from bumping up, down, up, down, up, down, you know, from Division One to Division Two, or, you know, FBS to FCS based on their roster. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I still think it's like, dumb, but I there's got to be another way.
I don't even think that's the reason, because there's a whole process to be able to do that. So I don't think you could really do that. I mean, I'm sure maybe you could, but it'd be very difficult to do that bouncing back and forth. I think it's because of the brand recognition, right? Like a lot of teams that come from, like when Georgia State came, no one knew who Georgia State was that didn't live near Georgia State. But it's like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like if you've won 10 games, like I think what they should do is they should say, like, I think they should do like maybe a tier, or not a tiered, but like a your first year in FBS, you have to win a minimum of 8 games or 9 games, right? And then like you like, over the course of like maybe 2 years, you get down to the same as everybody else. Does that make sense? Like,
sure.
Formula One has something like that where it's like new teams.
That's a good idea.
New teams have like these certain things that they don't get as much of to make sure somebody doesn't just jump into F1 for a year and is terrible and then takes the money and runs. Like there's all these commitments you have to make. And I think that's the same thing NCAA does. It's a simple process. It's not that complicated.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just think that James Madison should be in. But anyway.
Yeah, agreed. Well, let's wrap up with the Oklahoma Sport pod with talking some Thunder. Jared, do you realize we are 1/7 of the way through the season? And because of a win that we will talk about here in just a second, the Thunder are tied for the second best record in the West with the Nuggets and the Mavericks. They are the number 2 team by record in the West. Like, that is insane. It is insane.
It's insane. And I want to ask you this before we like get into some of the deeper dives on this. Because my looking at it, I feel like, you know, people could look at it and say, well, Chet's better than what we thought or whatever. Chet's just really good or whatever. I think everybody's been playing better this year. Like overall, like the team as a whole is just playing better.
This team's stacked. I mean, that's just all you can, like, is it stacked with, you know, all SGA, NBA guys? Not necessarily, but.
SGA's your superstar, and then you have a lot of stars.
You got a lot of, and Chet's on his way to being a great one. So is J-Dub, but they're there. So let's just talk about how we got here, shall we? We played. Played Golden State at Golden State the other night without Steph Curry, without Draymond Green, bunch of guys out, different things. They kind of got out to a huge lead. It got chopped all the way down, then they spread it out again. Well, then they turned around last night, Saturday night, played them again. Chet hits a 3-point shot in the corner, heavily contested turnaround three to send it to overtime, and then SGA goes, I got game. Like, just dominated overtime to beat the Warriors again. So twice they beat them on the road in their gym, one with Steph Curry. Huge win. Like, dude, to say this team is exceeding expectations is crazy. I'm going to pause for a minute because I see your face. Do we have breaking news? Because it feels like we do, unless this is like your like date canceling on you for later in the week. I don't know, but
no, I was pulling up because the Thunder are playing the Trailblazers right now, which the Trailblazers are terrible.
Right on that. A back-to-back, third game in 4 nights.
Yeah, but they're Portland's 3-9. It's 134-88 right now.
Wow.
But I just want to I'm just gonna run down a couple of the guys. Chet Holmgren.
Yep.
Chet was 6-for-6 from the field, 2-for-2 on 3 points, 6 rebounds, and has 16 points, and he only played 20 minutes.
Wow.
SGA, 23 minutes. He was 10-for-13 from the field, 1-for-1 on 3 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, had 28 points total. Giddey, 23 minutes, shot 50% from the field, 6 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds. I mean, like, you go down here and it's like, dude, I don't even know what the overall team shooting percentage right now is 60% for the whole team. And they played, I don't even know how many people, hang on, I got to count this.
13.
They played all 15.
Oh my gosh.
They played all, I was like, there's no way they played all, 15.
That's wild.
They're just, I mean, again, it's not a good team, but it's like I said, when you look at the stats, in 20 minutes, you put up between Chet and SGA, basically in 40 minutes of their combined play, they put up 46 points?
46 points in 20 minutes.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Two players.
No, 44 points. 44 points. I'm dumb. That's wild.
Crazy. Well, and that's what, I mean, again, you know, you and Troy and I talked about this, you know, early in the year of what, you know, what's a realistic like win number for the Thunder. And you, I think you were the one that went in the 50s.
I said 50, yeah.
And, you know, and Troy and I were close to 50. We weren't all far apart. Troy was actually the most negative. Troy was like, I don't remember, like 46. I think somewhere in that neighborhood.
I think he said like a game or two above 500.
500, yeah. So like, yeah, he was like 40, 44, 45, somewhere in that neighborhood, you know. But I mean, they're on pace right now for like 53 wins. They are top 10 offensive efficiency, top 10 in the entire NBA, not the West, but in the entire NBA defensive efficiency. I mean, they're all over the place. But here's the thing, man. Like, I just got to... In Sam Presti, we trust, folks. And Sam, not only is this man stockpiled like 75 first-round draft picks in the next 10 years, listen to this. Think about these drafts. 2020, he drafted the rights, traded for the rights to Micić in 2020. Now, he didn't play till this year, but if you've watched any games, I will say this. I did not realize Micić's decision-making, playmaking, and assist ability that he has. He is a deadly passer, and he really sets people up great. Okay, you're talking about one of the best Euro players there are, Presti gets him. 2021, he drafts Giddey. He drafted Trey Mann with the 18th pick, and he drafted Wiggins with the 55th pick overall. And Aaron Wiggins is actually a role player on this team with the 55th pick. Trey Mann has hardly seen the floor at the 18th pick. And yet when he gets on the floor, all he does is make buckets. That's what he does. And then in 2022, you draft Chet at number 2, right? And you draft J-Dub at 12. And like when the people did the redraft last year, J-Dub was a top 4 pick in the entire draft from the 12 spot. And now this year, 2023 draft, with the 12th pick overall again, they traded the 12th pick and a trade exception to get up to number 10 to draft Cason Wallace. And by the way, Cason Wallace is a dog. That dude, he can play right now. He can be put on the floor right now in any situation, and he is going to ball out. Sam Presti has murdered the draft for 4 straight drafts. Like, absolutely killed it and has put together an incredible roster.
So, you know, here's something that's interesting. I actually had a conversation. This is what's wild. So one of my buddy's wives, she does corporate accounting, right? And I had no idea about this, but we were, I was at his house and like, I knew he liked the Thunder and stuff. Like he's a sports guy. He's an OU guy, right. Thunder guy, whatever. And I mentioned something to him and I was like, one of my boys was like, well, what are they gonna do with all those draft picks? You can only have 15 men on a roster. And she's like, oh, they'll just do. And I can't remember what the word is, but basically she was like, he's probably doing like what people do in corporate accounting where you have like assets that you keep basically rolling forward. Like you have to like trade them and stuff like in whatever terms, but it's like, that's what he's doing. He's just holding. Like, if you think about it, it's like the man can build a never ending dynasty if he's just drafts well. Right. Or at this point he has so many draft picks. Like I said, if you know, I don't know. It's like, I guess I'll pick Wembanyama since he's like the other big hot young player, but it's like, say in 2 or 3 years, San Antonio is not doing well.
Right.
Then it's like, okay, then does he have enough picks? He'd go to him to be like, look, you need to rebuild. I got the picks.
Yeah.
I want Wembanyama.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, it's things like that that you could really do that are just wild. But it was funny because she was like, she like chimed in and I was like, what? She's like, oh yeah, like he's got like, and she like knew the draft picks and everything. I was like, bro, like I knew like watch basketball, but this blows my mind that you were like so in depth. It was like weird having an accountant, like, you know what I mean, break it down for me. But anyways, good time. But yeah, dude, Sam Presti is he's got to be, like I said, if somebody thinks he's not top three GMs in the league, I would love to know who is ahead of him.
Yeah, I mean, you. He's the crown jewel right now, you know? And like, let's also be clear, like, he's the guy who was willing to stick with Scotty Brooks when nobody knew who he was. That worked out pretty well. I thought the Billy Donovan hire was a good hire. It just unfortunately didn't work with the roster with KD, just, you know, bailing, and you don't get anything back for Kevin Durant because he signs in free agency as opposed to a sign and trade. So that set the whole organization back. And then you hire Daigneault. And dude's killing it. Like, I told somebody this the other day. I told Troy this the other day. I think Mark Daigneault is Eric Spoelstra 2.0. This guy that nobody's really heard of and yet is just a savant when it comes to basketball.
Well, look, here's the other thing I think nobody ever talks about. Sam Presti stayed at Oklahoma, and you don't think that there's not other teams that have knocked on his door. You don't think there's big market teams that have had down years that have wanted to come for Sam Presti? Like, you know, I mean, they've got to be like, literally, if they, maybe we should up the tax in Oklahoma by like another little more percent so we can keep just some of that goes to Sam Presti so he stays.
Yeah, but, no doubt. Right. No doubt.
But yeah, wild. Well,
wild weekend. That's the Oklahoma sports side of things and kind of wraps all that up. But Jared, I didn't stay up to watch it. I had to work on other things after the day was wrapped. Okay. All I've heard is the F1 Vegas race was apparently a problem. Like,
so no, well, okay, so the race was fantastic. The race was one of the best this year.
Okay,
it was chaotic. There was a lot of stuff going on. The track probably wasn't top. Like, it was very slick track, which I guess is good and bad because it makes things interesting. You have to drive with a little bit more skill. But you did see some guys like have some accidents where it's just like they really didn't do anything wrong. It's just they hit a slick spot or whatever. Now the weekend leading up to is where it was chaos. So they had during free practice one, they literally ran for like 4 minutes. This is where it gets like crazy. So it's going to be, it won't be long, but 4 minutes in, Carlos Sainz, who drives Ferrari, went over a drain cover. Now it's just like one of those little drain covers like this big. It's like a little mini manhole. It's not a big thing, about the size of maybe a softball or something, but those things weigh probably, you know, a fair amount of weight.
Right.
And these cars are light and made out of carbon fiber, which isn't known to be able to just, you know, get smacked by something and be okay. And he went over it and it hit the bottom of his car, damaged it pretty significantly, enough that he had to replace like the battery pack on his car and all kinds of stuff. So they had to red flag the FP session one. Right. Which means they stop. And then they said, we're not resuming because they had to go fix the manhole covers, which basically what they did. And I don't understand how this is going to be a long term solution because they're clearly there for a reason.
Right.
But they just went and asphalted over them. So I don't know. So that took hours. That took like 5 hours. So they delayed FP2. I think it was like 2 hours or something. I don't remember. But then they said, well, because it's going to be so late and because of logistical issues, we're not going to allow fans in the fan zone during the race. So all these people that paid, there's apparently a class action lawsuit already like being filed by people because it's like people paid thousands of dollars to be there and they didn't get to, they missed a whole session of what they came to see. But everything else went like FP3 went well, qualifying went pretty well. It was chaotic. Like I said, there was a lot of weird stuff. Of course, it's a new track, so that's always adds an element because
right.
Like most other tracks, what people don't understand about that don't know F1 is like most of these guys, if they, especially in Europe, even if they add a track that's never been right, like there's a track that's only been on the calendar now for a couple of years called Zandvoort.
Mm-hmm.
And they rebuilt it and did some different things, but a lot of those guys had raced there before. Like they were familiar with a lot of the corners and stuff like that. Like this is nobody's, they've obviously not got an F1 car, any kind of car, and raced around a track that's built on the strip. Right. Yeah. So that's all new element. So it was just a wild thing. Max ended up winning it, which isn't a shock. There's one race left, I think in 2 weeks' time. So yeah, actually, no, it's next week. It's next week. So next Sunday, the season wraps up in Abu Dhabi. But yeah, it was a fun thing. I really want to go still. They did a good job. It was a little cringe because it was the first year. So they really tried to lean into the, I'll have to see if I can find the tweet and send it to you, but like they tried to lean into like the whole Vegas thing. So they had like, for instance, when they introduced the drivers, they had the guy that does the boxing matches. That's like,
yeah,
in this corner and like yells. Right. And all that stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the, like the drivers didn't know how to react to it. You know what I mean? Like, so there's like a really awkward exchange where one just walks up to him and was like, just like stares at him. And like, it's just like the most awkward exchange ever. So there was like some cringe moments like that, but I think that'll get toned back a little bit as they go forward. This was like, obviously they're trying to.
Well, it sounds to me like you're going to have an opportunity to get some really cheap tickets next go round because of the poor experience on round number one.
I honestly, I don't know. I mean, I would have said that before the race, but after the race, like a lot will depend next year, right? If right. Next year's race sucks, then probably. But like this year's race was so good, and they actually did a really good job of having some crazy good camera angles and everything like that. The race itself did phenomenal. So that part of it, I think, will be, if that keeps being good, then yeah, tickets will still be expensive.
Right, that makes sense.
But it's cool. It's like I said, it wraps around the strip, goes around the sphere, whatever that thing's called.
Yeah.
So it's neat. So if you guys haven't watched F1, like I said, maybe next year tune in for the F1 Grand Prix in Vegas. And then obviously there's a race, one race left, you want to tune in. So, but yeah, I'm a big F1 guy. You need to get into it, but we can have F1 talks during the off season, you know?
Oh gosh. Yeah, absolutely. So, well, very good. Very, very good. Well, that's all that we've got info wise. Again, please leave a 5-star review and a comment if you like this at all. Again, everything we do is free. It always will be free. We are not going to be a paywall. We are not going to do any of that. But man, we like to talk it. We hope we give you some insight, some information, some angle. That's just fun. We try just to be fans and guys that know a little bit about the game and talk about it from a football perspective, from a basketball perspective. Just trying to enjoy Oklahoma sports as much as we can with the Thunder being here. And men's and women's basketball is kicking off, gotten off to a great start as well for OU. We'll be talking that more as we kind of move out of the football season. So again, join us for the ride, man. Again, we're just here trying to have a great time, and we hope you are too. I'm Daryl, that's Jared, and we will talk to you guys later.
Bye, Baker.
Cha-ching, a Thunder money ball.
And you can unhitch the wagon. Put the ponies in the ball.